church. Good morning, everybody. So good to be with you guys today. Hey, I just got to say this as we move rolling through the morning. I know we all lost an hour of sleep last night, but you guys look fantastic, right? I know they call it beauty sleep, but I wouldn't get the impression that anybody in this room missed out on anything. Love you guys. Thanks for being here. Hey, just a few things to put out in front of you. You guys have the bulletin that's in front of you. All these things can be found in there. So any further questions, you can consult that. Or Terry is actually in the back at the welcome table and can answer any of your questions. But tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m., we're going to gather young adults together in Fairlawn. The business is called Kingdom Title. And we're going to do dinner and we're going to talk. And you guys know we've been for several weeks now talking about seeking the welfare of the city. And if we're going to do that, like if we're really going to have an impact around us, then we have to start doing some things differently that we haven't done before. So one of the things that we're going to start leaning into is we want to get our young adults gathered together, living in houses around the areas that we want to impact. And so there's really three things that we want to see happen here. One, we want to see you guys living in community because God calls us to follow him in the context of a community of people. Two, we want to see out of that community, we want to see you guys being missionally engaged in and around the neighborhood that you live in. And the third thing is we want to see you making financial decisions, right? Because the rent that we're going to offer you is going to be way cheaper than anything else you're going to find anywhere else. And so we want you to use that surplus to get out of debt, get yourself in a position to then be positioned to be generous for the rest of your lives, right? Because the kingdom advancement, sometimes it takes some resources to do that. So if you are at all interested in hearing more about that, it's going to be tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m. Dinner is included in that. So even if you don't care about what we're talking about, just come for the dinner, okay? And if you are young and married and you're renting somewhere right now, but this sounds appealing to you, we want you guys to come too because we're actually going to start, we hope, moving in all kinds of people, but young marrieds too. You guys are fluid and flexible. So sign up in the back just so we know numbers and we'll get enough dinner for everybody. Okay, next thing is Women's Retreat coming up next weekend. It's next Friday evening through Saturday night. And so ladies, sign up. It's always a phenomenal time. I've never experienced it myself, but I always hear that it is really good. So ladies, if you're gonna sign up, it's coming, sign up. Membership class is coming up March 23rd. It's a Saturday. We're actually going to be in this room from 9 to noon. So some of you guys have been coming for a while now, and you think, wow, this I think I'm in. This is my church. I want to commit. Membership class is us talking about who we are, why we exist, what we believe. At the conclusion of that class, we're going to give you 6 days to decide if this is really a place that you want to commit as a member or if you just want to stay coming as an attender. That's up to you. But if you're ready to make that move, membership class coming up next week. Okay, now some of you guys are worried because we haven't taken offering yet. Any creatures of habit in the place, right? We haven't taken offering on purpose because we're doing something different this morning. We're going to hear in just a couple of minutes from Pastor Joe, our senior pastor, and Dan Gregory, who runs Restore Ministry, very closely affiliated with CCC. And we're going to talk about some really cool things. We're going to take offering at the end of the teaching this morning. But just to kind of wet the whistle, just to kind of get us thinking in the direction of where we're going to go. It was Friday. I had an errand to do in the city. And anytime you're in the city getting off the highway, you know what we see. We see people standing there with a sign asking for money. And typically I'm going places and I'm on a schedule. I don't have time to linger. But this, I didn't have anywhere to go. It was my day off on Friday. So as I'm pulling through, I thought I've got time. This woman that's standing here looks terrible. So I pull the car off and come back and engage this one. We have a 45-minute, just phenomenal conversation on so many levels. And here's the story that she told me in a nutshell, right? Here's her story. She went to the dentist at one point and had some teeth pulled. There's some other issues going on in her life, but she went to the dentist, got some teeth pulled. From there, the dentist prescribed some pain medication that she really enjoyed and kind of got hooked on. And from there, it snowballed into bigger and deeper things. Then she started taking heroin just for fun because it felt good, which then turned into an addiction, which has moved her to the place where now her and her husband are homeless, splitting time between Tent City and a room that they kind of have access to but kind of don't. And every single day, they have to give themselves a hit of heroin, not to feel good, but to not feel terrible. And their lives are in shambles. And I read it all over her as I drove by, and I just felt like, all right, I need to stop and just lean into this. And so that story of Jessica, who I met Friday, is multiplied hundreds of times all around this city in the faces that we drive by every single day, right? So if we're going to seek the welfare of the city, then we've got to do that on multiple levels. And one of those levels has to be those people that we drive by every single day. And that doesn't mean that you give them money. I rarely do, although I did Friday because I felt like I was supposed to, right? But it does mean that we lean in and see where that relationship goes. And I think as we talk about what we're talking about this morning, there's further that we can go with those people that have a whole host of needs. So with that, I'm going to invite up Pastor Joe in just a second. But you guys know in Highland Square, we're hospitable, right? We extend a warm welcome to whoever is here. But today we have a special guest, right? Our senior pastor, Joe. Just I want you guys to know this. Highland Square has been in existence for, I believe, 8-ish years. And Pastor Joe has been the greatest champion of this body of believers for the past 8 years. Right? He has been working behind the scenes, making decisions that are for us, laying himself down and his resources down and his own staff down for the sake of this church actually becoming a body of people, right? And he's been doing it. You guys haven't seen it. I have. And so on behalf of what I've seen, and I'm going to ask you to trust me with, I'm going to ask you to give a super warm Highland Square welcome to our senior pastor, Joe Coffey.
Thanks. We need you guys up at Hudson when I get up to speak. That's a welcome. Thanks so much. It is so good to be with you. I pray for you guys all the time. And every time I meet with Brian, I'm excited, not just about what God's doing here right now, but what I feel like he's going to do in and with and through you. So that's just great. Up at Hudson, we've been in a series called Christianity Famous or Infamous. And I decided to do that series because we want to make Jesus famous. That's our goal this year, to make him known to everyone and everywhere. But sometimes Christians, we are our worst enemies. We do things, we behave in such a way that instead of making Jesus famous, we make Christianity infamous. So this series has been about that. And I ended this series with a message that I'm going to give you right now. And the message is titled with a question: is Christianity good or bad for the world? Is Christianity good or bad for the world? Richard Dawkins, who is an avowed atheist, he wrote a best-selling book called The God Delusion. He said in his acceptance speech for the Humanist of the Year Award, he said, "Faith is like smallpox. It is one of the great evils of our world and needs to be eradicated." He said, "Faith is not just not good for the world, it is so bad for the world." And he said it should be treated like smallpox and should be eliminated, eradicated. Now, that's a very extreme view. But there are plenty of people who are driving by churches today, plenty of people who are driving by this church right now, who look over and look at this church and wonder if we do any good for anybody other than ourselves. They wonder if we are a group of people that are so heavenly minded, we're of no earthly good. They wonder if when we gather together on a Sunday, we sing songs, we pray prayers, we talk about God, and we go home. But out of all the religions in the world, out of all the political parties, out of all the special interest groups, out of all the movements, Christians ought to be the very best for the world. We ought to be the very best for the world. That's why I love when Brian talks about doing something here for the welfare of the city. That's why I get excited about what you guys are doing. And let me explain why we should be the best. Let me start with a single word. And that single word is shalom. Shalom. It's a Hebrew word. And I know that Brian told you a couple weeks ago that when you say you're going to seek the welfare of the city, when God says seek the welfare of the city, that word welfare is the word shalom. He's saying seek the shalom of the city. Now, shalom is this Hebrew word. If you're going to translate it into an English word, you translate it into the English word peace. Peace. But the problem is that the Hebrew word shalom is a much more robust word than the English word peace. The Hebrew word shalom means more than an absence of conflict. It means even more than harmony. It means a fullness, a completeness in life, a flourishing in every aspect of life. If you have shalom, that means you are flourishing and you have this fullness of life spiritually, relationally, physically. And the story of the Bible starts with shalom. Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden and they experience the world and the shalom that God had created in every aspect, right? They were flourishing spiritually, emotionally, physically, relationally. Their world was like this sheet where it was without flaw, without mark, without tear. And this was their world. And we don't know how long they lived in shalom, but we know the moment they decided to rebel against God, the moment they sinned, the shalom was shattered. And it was shattered in every way, not just spiritually. This is the way the Bible describes it in Genesis chapter 3. It says, after they sinned, this is what happens. And Adam and Eve heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God called to the man and said to him, where are you? And he said, I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. Up until that point, they had this wonderful, flourishing relationship with God. But when they sinned, something had happened. Something broke. Something tore. And when they, instead of having this flourishing relationship with God, instead they were filled with fear and shame, and they hid. And the first tear in the fabric of our world happened that moment. But then it doesn't stop there. Shalom is also relational shalom, and it says in the very next verse, God said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? The man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me fruit of the tree. And I ate. I always try to picture in my mind what that was like. Right? So Adam and Eve are standing before God, like little kids in front of a parent. And God says, Adam, he addresses Adam, Adam, why did you do that? Did you eat? Did you disobey me? Did you eat of the tree I told you not to eat from? And Adam, instead of saying, yeah, I did. And I'm so sorry. Adam looks up at God and he goes, and he points at Eve. And he says, the woman you gave me, it's her fault, right? I want you to just imagine, if you were Eve, I just try to imagine my wife, if I did that, she would look at me and just go, what are you doing? Throw me under the bus. And that was the first marital fight. That relationship began to clash that moment, the first fight between a husband and a wife. So the second tear happens in relational shalom is tattered and the fabric of the world is torn. And then it goes on, verse 17. And to Adam, God said, because you've listened to the voice of your wife, eaten of the tree of which I commanded you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat of the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Every ache and pain you have, every bad night's sleep, every part of the deterioration of growing older, up to and including death itself, every frustration you get from work, whatever you do, is a result of this sin. Sin enters the world, and it shatters not just the spiritual shalom, not just relational shalom, but it shatters the physical shalom that God intended. And so the third tear happens in the fabric of the world. And that's one day of sin entering the world. And there are only two people in the whole world. And already, the shalom, the fabric of our world, is being torn. But since that day, there have been many, 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 many more days. And there are many, 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 many more people. So our world doesn't look like this. Instead, the world in which we live looks like this. And this is the world into which Jesus came. This is what Jesus came to. And what's interesting is when you read the Old Testament, what you find all throughout the Old Testament is God saying that he was not going to give up on the world, that he was going to restore the world, which makes no sense at all. I mean, it's not economic sense to do that. Because if you had a sheet, like if I had a sheet like this at home, I would never try to repair it. I'd just throw it out. Buy a new sheet. It's way too much work. How much easier would it be for God to just throw away this world and make a new one with shalom? But God doesn't throw things away. And that's one of the most wonderful things about Christianity, is that the God of Christianity never throws things. He doesn't throw you away. He doesn't throw me away. He doesn't throw the woman that Brian spent 45 minutes with this past week. He doesn't throw her away. And God promises, right, that he's going to send something to someone to restore, right? And then Jesus comes. And when Jesus comes, in Luke chapter 7, John the Baptist is in prison, and he has heard about Jesus, and he sends messengers to Jesus to ask Jesus, are you the one that was promised? Or do we look for another one? Are you the one? Are you the Messiah? And this is Jesus' response in Luke chapter 7, verse 22. And Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, the poor have good news preached to them. You hear what Jesus says? Jesus tells them, hey, listen, go tell John that it's already begun. That everywhere I go, I am sowing up tares in this world. Everywhere I'm going, I'm restoring. Jesus comes face to face with a leper. And in a moment, the leper is hugging his family with his brand new skin. Jesus comes into contact with a paralytic. And in a moment, the paralytic is leaping and hopping and running on his brand new legs. Jesus comes into contact with a prostitute. And she starts to experience pure love for the first time since she was a little girl, or maybe the first time ever. Jesus walks through the world, and everywhere he goes, shalom happens. You know, we've watched movies. You know, we've all watched movies where there's a villain in the movie. And everywhere the villain goes, he leaves a swath of destruction in his wake. But the world had never seen anything like this, where Jesus comes into the world, and instead of leaving a swath of destruction in his wake, he leaves a swath of shalom, of healing, of restoration, of fullness of life everywhere he goes. Jesus, when he's heading to the cross to do something for this world, to do something for humanity that has never been done, that could not be done by any other. And in John chapter 14, he has just told his disciples that by the end of the week, he'll be hanging on a cross. And later on in the chapter, this is what he says to them. Peace I leave with you. Peace, he says. Remember the English word, if you're going to translate shalom into an English word, you translate it into the word peace. And what Jesus says to them, shalom I leave with you, my shalom I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. The best kind of peace the world can offer is an absence of conflict on the outside in your circumstances. Jesus comes and he says, I'm about to do something that will come deep down into the torn up part of your soul, and it will be healed. And you'll begin to experience a fullness of life you have not ever known. And that shalom I give to you. And then Jesus goes to the cross and he's crucified, and he's resurrected. And when he does that, it sets off this reaction. It's like an explosion. And what happens is that as people begin to believe in what Jesus had done for them, that he was crucified for them and that he was resurrected in power for them, and that if they believe in him, something will happen deep down in their own souls. The more people believe that, the more they were healed. And when they were healed, what happened in their relationship with God, they had peace with God. And that shalom came inside of them. They became carriers of shalom, like you're a carrier of a virus, only instead of bringing death, it brought life. I read a book by Rodney Starks. He's a sociologist and historian. He wrote a book called The Rise of Christianity. And what he did was just study why Christianity was able to spread across the Roman Empire at such a rate, because nothing had ever happened like that. Nothing has ever happened like that again. And he studied it as a sociologist, and what he came up with was this, that Christians, everywhere they went, the Christians were the ones who cared for the poor. The Christians were the ones who cared for the sick. And then he said this, but the biggest thing that they did in those first couple of centuries was that every time a plague would hit a city and the healthy people would run out of the city, it's the Christians who would run into the city. And then they would care for the people who were suffering and the people who were dying. And the people who survived, almost all of them became Christians, because they would look at the person who cared for them and say, why? Why would you do this? You don't even know me. And the answer would be, Jesus. Jesus came for me to give me shalom, and I'm a shalom carrier, and I give it to you. And so healing happened in the world. All right, so about a little over 7 years ago, at Christ Community Chapel, somebody gave a very generous gift that allowed us to pay off our mortgage so we didn't have any more debt. And when we did that, we realized that we could figure out a way to give away weekends for ministry, so we started what we called Micah 6:8 Weekends. Micah 6:8 was where the prophet says, he has told you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. So what we started to do is that we would introduce a ministry to the congregation, a ministry that would be involved in healing some of the deep brokenness in our world, whether it was locally or globally. And we'd introduce everybody to that ministry, and we'd say, we want you to pray for this ministry. We want you to go, if you can go, and participate in what they're doing and how they are bringing healing in the name of Christ to this part of the world. And then we want you to give. And all the giving that weekend, all the offering would go toward that ministry. Christ Community Chapel wouldn't keep a dime. And over the last 7 years, we've been able to give away a little over $5.4 million to all these ministries all over the place. And it's one of our ways of wanting to be good for the world. So about 2 years ago, we were talking about what was going on in our own community with the opioid epidemic. Right, it was just ravaging our community. Ohio is one of the epicenters. In fact, 10 people in Ohio will die today of an overdose. 10 people tomorrow will die of an overdose. 10 people the next day will die of an overdose. There are over 1,000 more children in foster care since 2016 because of the addiction of parents. And we were thinking, man, we have to do something. So we recruited Dan Gregory out of the business world and said, Dan, we want to assign you something. We want you to try to figure out what's going on and what we can do. And so that means you need to find out why nothing's working, and then we want you to go around the country, wherever you need to go, to find what is working and the very best way to, and then we want you to form an organization and do that. And so Dan decided to do that. For the last 2 years, he has been creating what is now called Restore Addiction Recovery. And I want to show you a video that 2 years ago, when we introduced this to the congregation, we said, listen, we want to do this. We want to help start this ministry. And now it's its own 501c3. It's its own ministry. But we want to kick it off with a Micah 6:8 Weekend, so we can give Dan the resources that he needs to go and find out and figure out what to do. And I want you to see this video because Dan asked the congregation to pray. And I want you to hear how we responded to what he asked us to pray for. And then I want you to pay attention to what Eileen Shapiro says after that and how the prayer was answered. And then I'm going to have, after the video, I'm going to have Dan come up and tell us what he found when he researched it, what Restore is all about, and then how we can help. All right, so let's watch this video. So this is the hope. This area has gotten national attention for being the epicenter of the heroin problem, heroin and opiate epidemic. Wouldn't it be great if this area becomes the epicenter for healing? Tell us now what we can do as a church and what you see us doing.
Well, first and foremost, we would covet your prayers. As you pray, specifically pray for 30 to 40 acres of sort of rural land in Summit County for free. So make sure you throw that in there. If you're praying, finish with the free, okay?
Today, I am proud to announce that we are doing even more to expand resources in Summit County for those struggling with addiction. I will be introducing legislation to County Council to approve deals with Restore Addiction Recovery, which is led by Dan Gregory, and Hope United, which is formerly called Breaking Barriers, which is led by Travis and Shelley Bornstein, to put the Edwin Shaw property back to use. If approved, the county will donate 25 acres of the land on the Edwin Shaw campus to these two nonprofits for their vision to create a new long-term inpatient treatment center and sober living community center.
We're gearing up to put Restore Recovery back up in that same site to fight our epidemic now, which is the opioid crisis. So we're thrilled. It's kind of what Legmore does. It's what we're all about, helping others, joining in the fight. So I'm very excited about Restore.
The really interesting thing about this project is that the vision of it is, how does design support a building for healing? One where individuals are not patients, but rather children of God, called into a life of forgiveness, sacrifice, stewardship, and community. The design concept for this building is that it is not an institution, it is a house.
One of the things that really excited me about this program was the collaborative workforce development. And what that really means is these folks are working in the program from month two all the way to the end.
You will not be able to understand the impact that it's had, but it has impacted almost everyone all over, especially in our building trades. And it's something that, again, we have an opportunity to fix. We have an opportunity to start fix right here at home, in our own backyard.
I hope you noticed that when Dan asked us to pray, he said, make sure you ask for God to give it to us for free. And everybody laughed. And then that's exactly what happened. And you guys had more to do with it. This campus had more to do with it than you might know. So Dan, tell us the story about the land.
Well, when Joe and I first met a couple of years ago, he said, hey, you really need to connect with Brian Kunkler. And so he gave me his email, and Brian and I remember our first meeting was at the Waffle House right here, and I was waiting for a pastor to come in, and I couldn't find him. And so I asked this guy with a beard and flip-flops if he knew who Brian Kunkler was, and lo and behold, it was Brian. So that was our first meeting, and Brian and I began to formulate what this ministry could look like and how it could be different. And Brian said, hey, you know, I live sort of down near the Lakemore area. There's this old Edwin Shaw facility. It's a couple of hospitals, a bunch of these buildings around. It's probably way too big, but let's go talk to the mayor. So he knows everybody in town. So we go to talk to the mayor of Lakemore. And so as he's describing this property, he says it's, you know, about 85 to 100 acres. And I said, well, how much would that property cost if we were to buy it? And he said, I don't know, probably between $700,000 and $800,000. And I remember looking at him, I said, well, that's good. I said, do you think we could have it for free? And the mayor laughed. He goes, well, probably not. Well, 2 years later, all the buildings are down, all the land's been cleared, and Eileen Shapiro gave us 25 acres for us and another nonprofit for $5. So
Okay, now as you went out and researched what was going on with addiction recovery, what were the problems that you found?
I found a lot of people doing a lot of wonderful things, and the problem is so acute and it's so widespread that people had a hard time getting their arms around sort of the entirety of the problem. And so what we found was a lot of people would say, well, we need to provide jobs for people that are struggling with addiction. And somebody over here would say, well, what we really need is counseling. And somebody over here would say, well, what about housing? And because all those things are interrelated as you begin to unwind and unpack this addiction. And so we found just a lot of disconnected points of service. And you can imagine, if you like high school, you go to high school, it's one school, but you go to different classes and you can focus more on math if you need more math or more in English. Well, imagine struggling through an addiction and trying to piece together your recovery process. And even with that, sometimes they don't even adjoin. So you might go through 4 or 5 days of detox, but then your next step might be 2 weeks away. And so we would lose people, they would fall through the cracks. The other thing we found is that it was very prescriptive in the sense that we would almost have one answer for the entire population of people struggling. So if you look at this addiction crisis, it knows no boundaries. It affects every suburb, every group of people, male, female, and there's not one formula, there's not one path of recovery that fits everybody. So as we began to pack this all together, that's what we found.
So how will Restore be different?
So Restore is going to be different, first and foremost, because we're going to have a full continuum of connected care. So imagine 12 months of fully integrated services where the services come to you, you don't go to the services. So if somebody comes in and they have legal issues, we'll be prepared to help them there. If somebody comes into the program where they're married and they've got a lot of disruptive family issues now, we're there to help. So we're not gonna have one size fits all. So that's one, a full continuum of connected care. That's all gonna be really guided by licensed Christian counselors. So the first day of the program, you'll spend a full hour with a licensed Christian counselor that will begin to understand and unpack your story. So as Brian mentioned earlier with the story of Renee, she has a story. As you unpack her drug addiction, her answers and her sort of method to get healed is gonna be different than somebody else. And the other thing, it's gonna be 12 months residential care, and we're gonna start with men. So as you look at the total population of people struggling with addiction, we're gonna grab sort of the biggest slice of that, which is men with the ability to work. So we're gonna build a 75-bed initial campus on the Edmund Shaw facility.
Tell me where Jesus fits.
So, you know, for me personally, and we can describe all the elements of what Restore is all about, I call those design elements, but that's not what makes Restore work. What makes Restore work is Jesus Christ in somebody's life. And so for me personally, I'm one of those people that, nothing's ever hot enough, fast enough, portions aren't ever big enough. I push the limits of everything, so I'm sort of impossible to live with. So an example, like a few years ago, my wife had hidden this from me. For some men, there's a button on your oven, it's called the broil button. It's for people like me. So I don't know if you know this, but you can make nachos in under 3 minutes with the broil button. And that's just who I am, right? So when my faith really took off when I was 19 years old, I did the same thing. I said, okay, you can solve all my problems. And I took Jesus to the deepest, darkest recesses of my life first. Because in my world, if you can't go there, then that's not the Jesus that I thought you were. And there's a verse that I really like in Psalms. It's Psalm 32, and it says this: "Oh, what joy for those whose disobedience is forgiven, whose sin is put out of sight. Yes, what joy for those whose record the Lord has cleared of guilt. Finally, I confessed all my sins to you, and I stopped trying to hide my guilt. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord, and you forgave me. All my guilt is gone." And so Restore is going to be awesome, but there's no program or pill or preaching that's going to do the work of Jesus Christ. Only Jesus Christ can fix that. So, good.
All right, now, a residential program for 75 men seems like it could be enormously expensive. How is it paid for?
So a part of the plan with this group of population is we're going to introduce them back into work. And so we're going to be teaming up with local businesses that are in need of people that have real jobs in the community that want to be part of the solution. And so the idea is going to be, and we've proven this out through some other models, is that the men in the program, starting in month two, will begin to work a week. They'll be working a week, 1 week, and then off the next week. In the last 6 months of the program, they'll work full time. The income they make through working with these companies will flow back through Restore, and that will sort of offset roughly 60% or more of the operating costs. So imagine a program that's 12 months, that has a full continuum of care, that costs nothing to enter except a willingness to change, is a full 12 months that the men actually pay for 60% to 70% of the operating costs. At the end, they get $1,000. And what we provide for that is when they leave, they'll already have a job, we'll have identified a safe place to live, they'll already know what their support network is. So unlike a lot of other programs where the program ends and they say, well, we hope you find a job or we hope you find a safe place to live, that's all gonna be included.
And we've seen that. Thanks. And we've actually seen that work down in Columbus at Refuge. Tell them a little bit about that. And we have two people that we know that just graduated, who are from CCC, who just graduated from this program.
So as we looked at programs all over the country, and we sort of pieced together, sort of grabbing the best of each one, there's a program in Columbus called The Refuge, which did particularly well at the workforce development program. As I met with that executive director, he was, I mean, completely open-handed and said, you know what, I'll help you replicate. You tell me what you need and I'll help you. He has opened up his books, shared with us all of his processes, all of his format, and he's gonna be instrumental in helping us start the one up here.
And so now how can we help now?
You can continue to pray. The prayers work. So please pray for us because we're at the point now where we're going full steam. We're going to break ground in April or May. I was just at the job site Saturday, looking exactly at where the building's going to go. So we are closing down sort of the financial portion. We would still like to raise more money to build debt-free, but we've got so much now we're going to plow forward. So you can pray for all the little things. Like yesterday we were talking about where the water line comes through and gas. So all the things that normally start bogging down a program, you can pray for all that. And then as you want to get involved, you can go to the Restore Addiction Recovery website, which is just restoreaddictionrecovery.com. There's some brochures in the back. Sign up on our website. If you've got a particular skill or you want to be involved, send us an email. Believe me, we keep pulling those emails. I had emails from 2 years ago where people volunteered to help. I just pulled them up. So they had forgotten, but we're ready to go. So if you want to be involved, be involved.
Okay. All right, now we are going to watch a video now. It's about a 4-minute video of a man named John who came from the Refuge. And we want you to just see this because what we want you to do is see someone who we want to have dozens and dozens of men, maybe hundreds of men, end up with his story. So let's watch John's story together, and then we'll be through. Let's show the video.
My name's John Lucas. I lived most of my life here in Ohio. I grew up in upstate New York, and I was raised by a Christian family, so I had a really good upbringing. I knew right from wrong. My issues with addiction started to become evident in high school. I can trace it all the way back to when I was a sophomore. I had received an injury in track, and what that led to was me being prescribed opiates. And I'll never forget the first time I accidentally got high off opiates. was like my eyes were opened. All of a sudden, I could focus. You know, I was one of those kids who really struggled with paying attention, staying focused. And what this seemed to do is it took away all my social anxiety. It helped me focus. And I really felt like, wow, this is how I should feel all the time. And from that moment forward, drugs became a pivotal part of my life. As this issue began to bloom, it went from prescription painkillers to full-blown heroin because it was cheaper, it was more affordable, and it was everywhere. And it was at that point that my life just started to spiral out of control. And I remember one particular day waking up in a puddle of my own puke, looking around and seeing syringes and just wondering, how did I get to this point in my life? And at that point, I thought I was completely broken, but I was not yet ready. And it took about another 2 or 3 years of falling on my face, getting clean with sheer willpower, and then relapsing all over again. But what I started to realize was there was no answer within myself that could have saved me or broken these chains of addiction. And I'm terrified because at this point, I realize I'm the issue. And I don't have the tools to fix this. So when I came into the ministry, a coordinator by the name of Michael Saba sat down in front of me. He told me, John, you are looking for something in this world that the world can't offer. And at that point, he started to impart himself to me. He said, listen, I've been where you're at. I've sat in the same chairs you are sitting in. And what you're thinking right now, I also have thought those thoughts. And I've had those feelings. I'm here to tell you that there is hope through Jesus Christ. I've done treatment programs. I've done outpatient and inpatient. But what I was experiencing here wasn't just a temporary altering of behavior. I started to feel authentic transformation take place on the inside of me. But in the safe confines of this ministry, I was able to face these internal battles that I've had my whole life that I was just masking with drugs. And for the first time in my life, I began to take pride in who I was as a man, and more importantly, who I was in Jesus Christ. And that's what it all comes back to, is Jesus Christ, and my identity being in Him. And as I started to walk as a responsible man of God, I saw all these things start to fall in place in my life. I was in this atmosphere of love and acceptance and men wanting a better life, searching for their identities in Christ. And the ministry just provided those tools for us. I used to wake up with fear, desperation, pain, anxiety, absolute depression and hopelessness. Me now, I wake up every single morning before work. I am just, there's joy. I just wake up, like even this morning, I wake up with just waves of joy coming over me. And that's just because I have hope, something I never had before. Because I know what God's done in my life up until this point, so I know what He's going to do with the rest of my life if I just continue to pursue Him.